Okay, I believe we should take 554 and 557 together. Is that right?
Thank you, Mayor.
Read those two.
554, accept guaranteed maximum price of $152,181,850 from Hoffman Construction Company for the construction of the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvements Project. And 557, authorize a 1% dedicated fund account and authorize the Chief Procurement Officer to conduct solicitations and execute agreements in support of the Community Benefits Plan for the Washington Park Reservoirs Improvements Project, not to exceed $1,145,500.
Okay, Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. Today we are poised to take another big step forward in preparing our water system for the big one. The Washington Park Reservoir Project has been before Council on numerous occasions in the past as part of discussions of our federal LT2 obligations, in the context of land use decisions, and in connection with the Water Bureau's budget and current rate proposal. Most recently, we held a work session last fall to update you on the design, and today we ask you to consider the final council actions necessary before construction begins this summer. There are two items before you today. First, a report asking the council to accept the guaranteed minimum price for construction and to award the contract. And second, an ordinance to authorize 1% of construction costs in support of a community benefits plan. Here to present on these two items are Christine Moody, our Chief Procurement Officer, Mike Stewart, the Director of the Water Bureau, and Teresa Elliott, the Distinguished Chief Engineer of the Water Bureau. Who do I turn to first?
Christine.
Christine, welcome.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. As the Commissioner stated, the action before you today is the acceptance of the guaranteed maximum price of $152,181,850 and the award of a contract to Hoffman Construction Company. With me are Mike Stewart, Water Bureau Director, and Teresa Elliott, Chief Engineer. We will talk today about the technical aspects of the project, the procurement process, equity contracting goals, and the 1% community benefits.
So I thought first I might go through a little bit of history on the project.
And can you introduce yourself?
Mike Stewart, Water Bureau. I thought we might go through a little bit of the history of the project and kind of refresh our memories from the September presentation last year. This project is extremely important to the city, particularly the west side of the city. It serves more than 360,000 people, 20% of the retail customers of the city of Portland, and a whole bunch of our wholesale customers. We are expected to start construction on July 1. That's a regulatory date in the LT2 agreements we have made with our regulators. Where the project sits, up on top of the hill there, it's a critical point in our city's infrastructure. You can see it above the city, and it provides the water for the downtown. For background, this project has been a long time in the making, beginning in 2008. We came and briefed you in September of last year, 2015, and went through the project in detail. At that point, it was at 90% design, and we're here before you today with the community benefits plan and the guaranteed maximum price from our contractor. The project is key for seismic resilience. We need to be able to provide water to the city in the event of a seismic event. And from the picture I showed you, you'll recall that the Portland Hills fault there, it's not just the Cascade Subduction Zone earthquake that we're concerned with, but it's also the Portland Hills fault, which is a magnitude 6 capable fault. It's the hub for water on the west side of the city. It serves three hospital complexes and the downtown core. The downtown core of the city generates about $8 billion annually in revenue, and it's also a historical landmark. The area served by Washington Park, you can see in the slide above, That includes the Good Samaritan Hospital, the OHSU Hospital Complex, and the VA Hospital Complex. In getting this project done, we went through more than 3 years of outreach, worked extensively with community up in the vicinity of Washington Park. We partnered with a citizen committee that helped us design the above-ground features of the project, held many tours and meetings, and nine large meetings with a community sounding board that we convened to help us guide the project. The site challenges, as we discussed last September, are large. It's in an ancient landslide, weak soils on top of bedrock, which is typical for the area. The space is limited, so that gave us a design challenge. We looked at many options in designing this project, other places that we might put it. We were restricted by elevation. We have a gravity-fed system, and elevation is key. And our conclusion, after looking at all the options, that it was best left here. The challenge, you can see, is the landslide and the earthquake that you know about. We've done an extensive amount of work to pin down our site conditions. We've done over 46 borings in the immediate vicinity of Reservoir 3 and 4. For a typical tank, you might do 6 or 7. We've done big test pits, do what we call pull-out tests. We'll show you a picture of the pilings, but a pull-out test is you drive the pile, and then you put a big jack on it, and you try and yank it out of the ground. And the reason is, in a seismic event, you get compression and tension, and you want to make sure that we're getting all the soil force that we need to get to hold the tank down, essentially. Reservoir 3, specific challenges. I think I explained this the last time we talked about it, that we're basically building two projects. We're building a very simple tank, a big, fat concrete box with lots of steel and rebar, and then we're building a fort around it, a second building almost, to deal with the landslide and the seismic events. And now I'm going to turn it over to Teresa to talk more about some of the technical aspects.
I'm Teresa Elliott, Portland Water Bureau Chief Engineer. I'm going to actually cover the next couple slides fairly quickly since we have covered them in the past. In Reservoir 4, we're going to be restoring some of the original ground to help stabilize the landslide and then use some of the basin of Reservoir 4 for our on-site drainage and overflow for the reservoir that is being built.
I think that slide has an exaggerated vertical scale. I hope so. Looks a little bit like Glen Canyon there.
Yeah. Reservoir 3, there is a number of retaining walls that Mike mentioned and support systems that need to be installed before we can start building the reservoir. And then we also need to build a flat workspace on the east side of the existing tank for the equipment to go back and forth. Reservoir 3 has been designed using the current building code and seismic codes and will increase the Bureau's ability to continue serving water for years to come. This is just another view of the different retaining wall systems that are being put in. The area that's in green is the buffer that's being put in between the existing landslide and the water reservoir. And the blue area in the middle is where the new reservoir will be sitting at. Mike mentioned that where it's a box within a box. This is what the original reservoir was envisioned to look like. And this is what the reservoir looks like with the additional box around it to protect it. So there's a number.
I've used the word fortress because I think what we're really doing is building a fortress around the reservoir and in order to protect it. And this slide tells you how much work has to be done to actually fortify it.
Correct. So at the 90%, we told you that it was $170 million. At that time, I was expecting my construction contract to come in at $140 plus or minus some, and I had a low to moderate confidence level. We are now at 100% design and have a negotiated construction contract of $152 million. And so I have adjusted my numbers and included the community benefits plan that we're also going to talk to you about. And my revised overall project budget is $190 million.
In the September event, we said that we were going to be plus or minus 20% when we presented the $170 million number. And what we're at right now is 11% above the 170.
Thanks, Mike. Some of the reasons for the cost change are because we are now at 100%, and we have we've refined our design, gotten into some more of the details that weren't fleshed out at 90%, and we're seeing changes in our construction market. So we've had to adjust our prices for the labor and materials escalation for this going out to 2024. And then we've added some contingency to it to make sure that we don't have to come back to you. Project schedule, we have a couple compliance dates that are coming up, actually three compliance dates that are coming up. One, we told EPA that we would be in construction by July 1 of this year, and that we would have the Reservoir 3 completed in December of 2019. And Reservoir 4 completed and disconnected in 2020. We are currently on schedule to meet that, and then the overall project schedule is to be completed in fiscal year 24. Christine.
Okay, so I'm going to just kind of go through the procurement process. As Mike and Teresa have mentioned, this has been a three-year-plus time frame for us. So in December of 2012, City Council approved the use of the alternative procurement method, construction manager, general contractor. The RFP was issued in October of 2013, and in November of 2013, three proposals were received. There was a selection committee of five members from Portland Water Bureau and a minority evaluator, and the selection committee selected Hoffman Construction Company as the highest scoring proposer. In April of 2014, the city entered into a pre-construction services contract for $1,359,980. And for this early work, Hoffman has already identified FM Birch & Associates, DBE contractor, O'Neill Electric, MBE contractor, PLI Systems, MBE contractor, Star Construction Services, WBE, and IQ Traffic Services, which is a WBE. So they are at 26.68% of the total contract for the DMW businesses. As council knows, the Water Bureau has had two pilot projects where the CBA community benefits agreement was on those two projects, and the subcontracting goal on those two projects was 22% of the hard construction costs, with 12% disadvantaged minority and women percentages. In this current project in our community benefits plan, we have the same 22% of hard construction costs, but the 12% is disaggregated, and all of the goal is disaggregated, 12% minority, 5% women, and 5% emerging small business. The workforce diversity goals for both apprenticeship level workers and journey level workers, there's a 31% apprenticeship requirement of, and 22% minority and 9% women. There's also a journey level goal for 28%, which is 22% minority and 6% women. Hoffman will also be required to meet the city's 20% apprenticeship requirement. So the difference is in this is we are disaggregating the percentages for subcontracting as well as having goals for apprentice-level workers and journey-level workers.
In addition to the report to council that's before you, we're also have the ordinance for authorizing us to do a 1% for community benefits fund. This would authorize us to spend the 1% of the reimbursable construction costs on things like technical assistance, workforce services, support for minority and women, subcontractors, and individual workers on the project. The Water Bureau will manage the funds directly and oversee how and where the funds will be spent. We're forming a compliance review committee that will review the performance in meeting the community benefits plan and advise the Bureau on how to spend the 1%. And the committee is expected to have members from the Water Bureau, procurement, the contractor, Maui Building Trades, one of the building, one of the pre-apprenticeship training program groups, and then hopefully another minority contracting group. Yours.
So I wanted to talk for a minute about the community benefits plan itself and how we got it, because I know that we've had a report released on CBAs, which were the pilot projects that we ran. We think that we have answered in a very good way the criticisms that we heard in the analysis of the community benefits, but community benefits agreement. One of the principal ones was a potential for conflicts of interest. In our community benefits plan, we're going to have all the players on the compliance review committee sign conflict of interest statements, so that should take care of that. To further ease concerns about conflicts of interest, the actual disbursements of funds will be done by a committee of city staff individuals. So the compliance review committee's job is to monitor compliance, make recommendations, and so on, but the actual choice to disburse city funds is going to be made by city employees. Behind me, we have, I lost track, six or seven folks who worked for weeks, 8 weeks, actually, on developing this community benefits plan. They included Matt Malmsheimer, Kelly Haynes, Willie Myers, Mike Birch, Maurice Romming, and Andrew McGough. We began this process in January. Commissioner Fish met with a group and charged us with getting together and developing a community benefits plan. And there's a lot of people to thank for that besides the folks I'd named, but I'd also like to thank Commissioner Fritz and the Parks Bureau. We grabbed their community benefits plan and used that as a basis for our document. So anything that's wrong with our plan is not Commissioner Fritz's fault or the fault of the Parks Bureau. It's all our own. We met for 2 months, every Friday, for at least 2 hours with a group of folks I named. It was not easy. It was difficult. There are probably things about each one of us don't particularly care for about this agreement, but we made reasonable accommodations to end up with a community benefits plan that I think we can all live with and that will deliver, I believe, $1.1 million worth of benefits to our community. So thanks again to Matt, Kelly, Willie, Mike Birch, Maurice, and Andrew for coming in. Not everybody made every meeting, but almost everybody made every meeting. On the city side, our team included Christine, myself, Teresa Elliott, Molly Washington, whom I think is sitting back there from the city attorney's office, Tracy Reeve from the city attorney's office. So we all sat down in our big conference room and we worked our way through this agreement, answering each other's questions, explaining, and arriving at the accommodations that we arrived at. I'd also like to thank one other person here who's still here, I think. Catherine Beaumont, sitting over there on the side, is our land use attorney, and that's very important to this project also. Barring that, I think that concludes our presentations. We can answer your questions, and then I'd like to let our partners in negotiating the community benefits plan come up, and they each have, I think, something they'd like to say.
Sure. So, questions? Are any members of the community review committee or whatever it's called?
Compliance review committee.
Are any of them being paid for their participation on this committee?
No paid.
Okay.
So, and I think we've got almost all the committee members nailed down already. But
so maybe just sort of for general information purposes, I mean, there's there's two items before us. One is the construction contract, and the other is the community benefits plan. Back to the construction project itself, it's gotten a little larger in cost. It's now a very, you know, it's a $190 million project. The plan shows that it is requiring maybe heroic is a little bit over the top, but heroic measures to build a reservoir on this site. Are there, you know, again, I know you looked at alternatives in terms of elevation, but comes a point in the project where you could reconsider. Are there any other legitimate options that might cost anything less and work as well?
We don't believe so. We checked other sites several times in the last 20 years, and all of them had very similar problems fraught with the same issues. And then this morning I actually got a report from one of my staff people, and they said that even in 1904, the American Society of Civil Engineers evaluated the site too. And they said that, yeah, that there are other ravines in the area that have similar characteristics, but none of them are more accessible or apparently more favorable as a reservoir site. And we still think that holds true today. It still works for us for the distance where our infrastructure's at and where the elevation of the reservoir is. We would end up having to do the same kinds of protection of those sites in ravines. And I have not assessed costs, but I think that the cost would be at least as much because we'd have to move our infrastructure to those locations.
Part of the challenge here, well, there's a couple, is one, we have to have the elevation we have because it's a gravity system. And the only way around that is pumps, which jacks up the price of water from now until forever. So we don't want to do that. We're stuck with the elevation. If you look out across that hillside, it's all high-value land. Because we're located on a hillside and it's a seismic zone, much of what you see in our pretty little pictures is going to be required no matter where you put it. And then you have the problem of big pipes coming in and out that would all have to be moved and joined up somewhere else. So you're going to be putting in miles of large diameter pipe. We just think this is the best option and we should proceed.
Okay, thank you. Other questions at this point?
Mayor, I have one invited panel.
Okay, please.
And we'll move this along. Thank you. If you could stick around to answer any questions that come up. I'd like to invite Maurice Romming, president of O'Neill Electric, Andrew McGaugh, executive director of Work Systems, Inc., Kelly Haynes, senior project manager of Work Systems, and Willie Myers, the executive secretary treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council. If the four of you would please come forward. At the four of you for now, Willie. And I want to thank you for not only scheduling time to be here today, but for your participation in this process. I think Mike Stewart said it best when he said that in good faith, the various sides sat down at the table with the goal of promoting opportunity and advancing our MWESB goals. In fact, one thing I think we can collectively be proud of is we've set very aggressive goals in this community benefits plan. But also, we had the benefit of some experience under the pilots, and we had the benefit of at least one independent review that sent some red flags. And collectively, we tried to improve on what is a bedrock principle of this council about promoting opportunity through these projects. Thank you for your service, and Willie, why don't you kick it off?
Sure. My name is Willie Myers. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council. Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners, for allowing us to speak to you today. It was definitely a challenging process we sat down with the Water Bureau staff to discuss this. I think we came up with a good policy in the plan itself with some pretty aggressive and good numbers for workforce diversity. With contracting diversity being a important component, DBE contracting goals are important. Workforce diversity is crucial to reaching out to a larger community and a much broader community with the benefit of employment on the public on the public projects to the underserved population of our great city. working with partners in our city with a track record of success to set the benchmarks in our plans and provide and employ only contractors that draw from the most diverse pool of qualified workers to provide construction services to our city is important. I think that the method or the plan for delivery might be absent from the plan. And so I think maybe we need another level of or type of an agreement to figure out how to bring that delivery, not necessarily with the city, but the responsible parties that are actually responsible for the delivery of that, figure out a way to accomplish that.
Thank you. Andrew McGall.
Thanks, Commissioner, members of the council. My name is Andrew McGough. I'm the Executive Director of Work Systems. I'm also actually a member of the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission, as well as a member of the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity, otherwise known as MAWI. And I actually is one of those guys that only was able to attend one meeting, the first meeting, but I do think it was I think the expectations were set out front, and it was clear that we were all there and genuinely interested in trying to figure out how to move the needle on some pretty complicated and challenging issues. And I think that's really where I wind up in all of this. I think there's a big interest, but the challenge is really in how do we do that? And from a workforce perspective, I think we do need to get to a place where we systematize how we approach these projects, and I do think we need to think more broadly than the city. It's great that you guys have some projects, but so does Metro, so does Washington County, so do others in the region, because we need to solve and we need to address the issues today, but ultimately from a workforce perspective, it's about how do we create a continuum to build the pipeline to make sure that we have the diverse workforce of the future and that they have those critical opportunities to go from project to project, because that's really how you transition from an apprentice to a journey-level worker. You have to have opportunity to work, and it's the same on the contracting side. To go from a subcontractor to a prime contractor or an owner requires an extended period of time and work, and I would just encourage that we think not only about the immediate, projects in front of us, but also understand that we need to be in this for the long haul. This is going to take time. These issues didn't emerge overnight, and it's going to take some significant time for us to address the issues and make sure that the workforce does adequately reflect the community and our values in making sure that people have the opportunities for these great jobs. And I guess the only other thing I would say, as it relates specifically to this plan, as the Director of Work Systems, which is the Workforce Development Board for the city, Multnomah and Washington counties, we bring a lot of capabilities and capacity to the table. We're a partner in these efforts, and I really hope that the city begins to view us as that and not necessarily just sort of another one-off organization who's out there and thinks about this occasionally. Last year, we trained more than 1,000 people, most of them low-income, highly diverse populations. We have a partnership with you right now with 700 low-income people called the Economic Opportunity Program, where we want to make sure that those people have connections to these kinds of jobs. And we're making investments to get them ready to be successful in a pre-apprenticeship program or in an apprenticeship. And making sure that those are connected, I think, is essential to moving forward on these plans and agreements or whatever we wind up calling them. So thanks very much. And I do thank you, Commissioner Fish, because I do think you set the vision that we need to continue to stay at the table, to think about this, and to continue to have the dialogue that we're going to need to really address a really challenging situation, but also one that offers a tremendous opportunity to the community. So thank you.
And for the record, we view you as a full partner and as a great resource.
Thank you.
But that obviously we need to deepen that relationship, and the oversight function about this particular plan, which is a further refinement of an ongoing experiment, is going to require all of us at the table to get it right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Maurice Romming is the president of O'Neill Electric. Welcome. We see your sign.
Have Kelly go first. Is that what you want?
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
There's Kelly? A microphone right there. You can just grab it if you want.
Maurice has just waived his time in the interest of time. Thank you, Maurice.
And there's a button on the base of it there.
So. Kelly Haynes is a senior project manager of Work Systems, Inc.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks. My name is Kelly Haynes. I'm at Work Systems. I also staff the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity, which is a broad coalition that was formed in 2011, made up of community, labor, training, and equity partners. So thank you for having us today, and thank you to city staff, the Portland Water Bureau staff, the attorney and procurement staff in working with us over the last 2 months. It was truly a positive and productive process to get to meet regularly to talk about the community benefits plan. On the Washington Park Reservoir Improvement Project, I think the overall experience built trust and goodwill. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
This
yeah,
is
it's
kind
just
of a funny
fluky.
Microphone.
Go ahead.
Okay. And we are interested in continuing to partner with the city along those lines to develop a meaningful template that includes all necessary components in the future. And we are happy to work toward that end. So the process was very positive. I think we still have concerns about the ability of the community benefits plan to achieve the stated equity and diversity goals. Because we see it as still lacking key mechanisms and delivery tools for success. And namely, a signatory component with all responsible parties we saw ongoing throughout this process was something that we continued to bring up and push for in order to make it successful. And we believe that without that key mechanism, the policy may struggle to deliver real impact for the community. But we do applaud the Water Bureau and staff for engaging and improving the plan as much as they saw was possible with their perceived constraints. But without a plan for delivery, we still see that it could run into some challenges in the future. And we believe that building upon the successes of the CBA pilots and continuing to figure out what does that formula look like is going to be critical, both on this project and on future projects. So overall, we think the experience was a positive one, and it's important that we continue to refine it with the lessons learned from the CBA pilots. But for this CBP, I think we worked as hard as we all could to get as far as we could. And from Maui's perspective, you know, it was a really good experience, and we also still want to continue to work with you to course correct over the life of this project. So thank you again for the opportunity to provide input and recommendations. And we do look forward to continued work together.
Thanks very much, Kelly. Maurice, welcome.
Well, thank you guys for having us. And I'd like to also thank the city staff that we worked with. They really tried to work and make sure that our needs are heard. But again, we feel like this is a good first step, but it's just as a first step. We need ongoing policies and ongoing things to actually make sure that inclusion for women minorities in the workforce is actually upheld. So I think that there are several things that we could continue to expand on as we look at other projects. And I think that the CBA, I think some of the things that we weren't able to get there with the CBP, I think mainly because of time restrictions, but again, I thought that city staff did a great job trying to implement as much of it as possible. But I do feel like we need to have the continual dialogue to actually weed out some of those things that could improve the utilization of women and minorities, not only in the workforce, but in contracting, that we know have a proven track record of success, and making sure that we have that collaboration between all the partners to make sure that they're participating in a meaningful way, whether it's be signing on to agreements so that they have buy-in and involvement, and that all programs and all groups have at least a seat at the table to actually have some meaningful impact. Thank you for your time. And again, I'd like to thank city staff for actually inviting us. One thing I would say is I would like to see on the advisory committee a representative from the ECPC. They were lacking there, and I'd like for you guys to amend that so that they have a voice at that table as well, as far as the committee that was established in the community benefits plan.
So let me get you to elaborate a little bit, because you've all been pretty clear about the concern about the lack of a delivery mechanism or implementation for the goals in the plan. I met last week, of course, with the ECPC, and you're working with the ECPC's working with the Office of Equity and Human Rights on some of these issues in terms of regional efforts. What would you say? You know, how do we close that gap, that delivery or implementation gap that we, using that term corporately, you know, the role of the ECPC, the role of the bureaus and the purchasing office, you know, in moving forward on projects, how would you suggest that we close that delivery gap?
Yeah, I'll touch on it first. Willie Myers again. I think with the oversight committee or with the compliance committee, if they have access to the data for the project that they need to identify whether or not we're achieving the goals set forth in the plan, and to have the ability to course correct is one of the biggest pieces, having meaningful oversight of our achievements on the project, as well as having the responsible parties that are responsible for the delivery of what we're of the goals we set forth in the plan, have some sort of signatory relationship with either the city or the general contractor to ensure that they're taking responsibility for it and agreeing to comply with or attempt to comply with the plan that we've set forth.
And Willie, let me just engage that for a second, because one of the refinements here is that the LMCOC, the Labor Management Committee Oversight Committee, that was tasked with essentially having a unique level of independence in overseeing the contracting and the expenditures, is being replaced by the Bureau reestablishing its historic role of being in charge of that process and ultimately accountable. So what we're talking about is, just to be clear, we agree collectively that someone has to be accountable, and we've established even more aggressive goals in this contract. The difference is it is squarely on the shoulders, the accountability falls squarely on the shoulders of Mike Stewart, Christine Moody, and the city folks, not on a LMCOC, which by the way, based on the report we got recently, there's a lot of issues that get raised by creating such an entity, including are they public officials, what are the governing laws, can you actually do that kind of contracting? So I just want to be absolutely clear. The commitment to accountability and to achieving our goals is there, and we have all made that commitment. The oversight body, the CRC, will be monitoring, will be getting data, will be helping us do, as you say, course corrections. And the other piece I want to put on the table is the council is going to get a report this summer, I think, hopefully this summer, on the final numbers and outcomes under the CBA on the two first pilot projects. So we'll be able to assess on those projects, did it make a difference? And if so, where? And then what are some of the additional lessons learned? And it is our collective intent to continue this conversation, because it's still a pilot and we're still refining it. And the next CBP on the next big project will incorporate some of our new and up-to-date thinking. But I just want to be clear, because the mayor's raising a very important question. The accountability piece here is squarely on the shoulders of city leadership, and as I believe where it should be. And you both as the members of the CRC and the community members have a right to hold the Bureau accountable for reaching those goals.
One thing I'd say on that is the LMCOC did more than just the 1%, those funds. I do agree with you that should fall squarely on the city. What the LMCOC did that was critical for its success is it had the community partners be able to feed to the pre-apprenticeship programs, then were able to feed into the apprenticeship program. Then we're able to move people into construction jobs. And I think that's a critical component, and being able to understand and be able to see those monthly reports that showed whether a contractor was failing to utilize the minorities and women as far as on the workforce, we were able to then help that contractor meet those goals by supplying them with that diverse workforce for both mostly on the subcontracting level. But I think the LMCOC played a critical role and making sure that we exceeded those goals. And goals are great, but if we don't have a plan to achieve them, and we don't have the right players in the room. So what the LMCOC was able to do is align those industry experts, align those community folks to be able to get a large, diverse group of people to enter into these programs and actually be successful at it.
That's a good point. And I know we're going to have another hearing on that whole process, so I don't want to get too off track on this one. I wanted to follow up with Commissioner Fish on Mr. Rahming's request to have somebody from the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission on the committee. Would that be acceptable?
I would hope that was the intent, but certainly I think that's a good suggestion.
Thank you. I think it would help both ways for the commission to know what you're doing here. And it is an iterative process where, as Commissioner Fish says, we all have the same goals, and we want to figure out together how to work on them. So thank you very much for your time.
Other questions, Mayor, for the panel?
Yep. That thank concludes the presentation, the invited panel, and whoever in the public is here to testify.
Yep. So thank you all very much. We appreciate your working together.
Thank you.
And working with the city staff on this. So there are two items on the calendar. People are free to come up and testify on one or both. One's the construction contract, and the other is this plan that we've just had described. So I don't know who you have signed up, Carla, but
we have two people signed up, Charles Johnson and D. White.
Okay, come on up.
Oh. I'm Dee White. I live at 3836 Southeast 49th. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, Mr. Miller, and Mr. Rust, who I don't think are in here. I'm adamantly opposed to moving forward with the Washington Park Reservoir demolition contract award to Hoffman Construction. This demolition decision is in litigation, as council is aware of. This is an offensive bullying tactic by our lame duck mayor and our unethical, dishonest commissioners on behalf of their crony contractors and, most importantly, the city's own profit center, the Water Bureau. These crony contractors, politicians, and well-heeled city employees are simply not going to walk away from this much money, no matter the cost to ratepayers in terms of their physical health and financial security. It's all about money, winning, and vindication, not health, not safety, not leadership, not good governance. The retail ratepayers, not the wholesale ratepayers such as Hillsboro, the retail ratepayers, that would be water users large like the Hilton and small like myself, are looking at being held responsible for paying $152 million, now here it's $190, for a likely future boondoggle in Portland's Crown Jewel Park, and we're as mad as hell about it, not to mention being fearful for the public health and safety of ourselves and our children. We're looking at shredded streets, including Burnside and all of the streets in Washington Park, dirty diesel truck pollution from 30,000 dump trucks, 6 years of road closures, vibrations, shaking, noise, pollution, not to mention destroying the functioning open reservoirs based on false and unsupportable findings by our mayor and city councilors. Currently, the Water Bureau is $610 million in debt, add another $152 million plus millions, most certainly guaranteed in overruns, and we're looking at least $762 million in debt and even more in debt service that the ratepayers will be responsible for once this contract is issued. Rate increases in perpetuity will be the legacy to our children from this 15-year debacle of unnecessary infrastructure, construction, and pet projects, courtesy of our mayor, our city council, and our water bureau. Citizens are challenging in the courts this stupid, irrational decision to demolish our open reservoirs. It is reckless and irresponsible for the OMF to be putting forth this enormous contract at this time. Please do not continue this process until it is settled in the courts. It's what the citizens of Portland want and deserve.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Good afternoon. I probably should have just recorded the prior testimony and played it back. It's quite succinct and to the point. In the consent agenda, we passed about $30,000 to study heavy metal air pollution dispersion. Every time we talk about environmental quality and regulation in here, the issue of diesel also comes up. So even though everything that was said in the previous 3 minutes is right on point and critical, I do want to ask if there's any provision in this $150 to $190 million boondoggle for clean diesel contracting, I realize that we're also trying to support minority businesses, and there's been some contention about this point, about the ability of minority contractors to get access to clean diesel fuel vehicles and reducing diesel particulate emission and the cancer risks associated with that. But I think that that is, you know, one tiny sliver of additional factors along with radon, Joe Glicker, excessive money channeled through CH2M Hill, or maybe they've dropped the hill now. But I do appreciate the engagement with the neighborhoods who are less vehement about resisting this guaranteed price, no overruns project. But as is pointed out, you know, if there's litigation, we don't have Scott Fernandez here talking, but, you know, many people think that we don't need to burden future generations of Portlanders with this certain or uncertain cost. So I really believe that you'd be showing better leadership if you do not pass this at this time. Thank you.
Okay. So
Mayor, just to sort of as a housekeeping matter, so today we're asking you to act on the guaranteed maximum price contract. The community benefits plan would come back to a second reading. I would note, just for my colleagues' benefit, that we have been on and off talking about this for a long time. We have just concluded a budget process where the Pub and the Cub both blessed our five-year capital spending plan and the proposed rates. There has been mention of litigation involving Washington Park, and as my colleagues know, at the Land Use Board of Appeals, Mr. Fernandez's claim was denied. It's on appeal. Our attorneys feel very confident of our position on appeal. And we are under a regulatory agreement that requires us to move forward, and that's what's now this. By acting on these matters today, we would be staying faithful to the timetable that we're operating under, following a very exhaustive community project. And I would note that we're working closely with the Arlington Heights neighborhood, who has given their support for this project.
So I take it you move the report.
Well, I'll let one of my colleagues move the report in.
I move the report.
I have a conflict.
All right. Well, no, you don't. You're the commissioner in charge. Is there a second? Go ahead. All right. Then let's take a vote, please.
So this is a really significant day for the city and for the Water Bureau, Mayor, and I want to just thank a few people. I'd like to start with the Water Bureau leadership team and the engineers. Led by Mike Stewart and Teresa Elliott, they have designed a solution to an almost impossible engineering problem. Congratulations and thank you. They were presented with an ancient landslide, a fault line, a registered historic district, and a federally mandated timeline. And somehow they came up with a solution, as they always do. I'd also like to thank all the community stakeholders who have faithfully engaged with the Bureau and the city staff to develop a community benefits plan, which we'll not be voting on today. And to my friends who are here today, we heard you loud and clear about where you think we still fall short. This is an evolutionary process. Our goal is, at the end of the day, we expect to be measured on outcomes. And we have the discussion this summer about how do we do on the pilots. My colleagues are going to scrub the numbers to see where do we move the ball, and if we didn't reach our goals, why not? And what can we do differently? Because we're deeply committed to this work. And, Mayor, I think the suggestion that we at some point broaden our lens so this is a regional approach and not just a city approach is a wonderful suggestion. We are deeply committed, though, to opportunity and equity, and it is reflected in the proposed CBP. And I am very appreciative of the comments which the invited testimony people said about the collaborative spirit in working with the Water Bureau. We can agree or disagree on issues as they come up, but that kind of mutual respect and engagement is what's going to sustain us on the long haul, and I thank you for the comments you made about the Bureau staff. Colleagues, I believe that these two matters, one of which we'll vote on today, represents the best of our values, a commitment to strengthening our system, ensuring high-quality water, preparing for the big one, and improving opportunities for women, minorities, and other disadvantaged groups. I want to thank Liam Frost, who has been leading this effort on my team and, as many of you know, recently became a United States citizen. And I want to thank Sonia Schmansky and Jim Blackwood for their work And I want to thank my colleagues. This has been a long and winding road, and we got there together, and I think we did it the right way. And today I'm proud to vote aye.
Councilman.
Aye.
Well, in addition to adding my thanks to everybody that Commissioner Fish noted, and thank you especially to the community partners, we are definitely, I believe, on the right track of working together. So once we're working together, then we can find the right outcomes. But it hasn't been easy. It won't be easy. And so we're going to have to continue to improve on each iteration. I thank Commissioner Fish for leading not only Environmental Services but also the Water Bureau and bringing the two utilities into public awareness and by explaining every step of the way what you're doing and why. And that has resulted in a lot more confidence in the community, a lot less angst over rate increases and the purpose of the matter before us today. And that's due also to a lot more public engagement by Bureau staff, and I very much appreciate that. Of course, not everybody agrees, and some of us didn't get what we wanted at certain stages, and yet you accept what is to be, and then you make the best of it. And I think this is making the best of it. In particular, it's making sure that when I don't really like to call it the big one. It sounds like some kind of fast food offering. That, but when a big earthquake hits, that we will be ready and that the West Side will have water, and that's essential. So thank you very much. And thank you for your partnership also with Parks. It is in one of the jewels of Portland's park system, and we very much appreciate the way that you've worked not only with Parks but also with neighborhood involvement and our diverse communities in Portland. So thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. This is a big commitment. It's got to be done right. I'm confident in our engineers for their evaluation of what those alternatives are, but it always is important to measure at least twice and cut once, especially when the cost of the project is like this. I'm not interested in inhabiting an alternative universe in which the city of Portland doesn't have to comply with federal law or rules, whether that's the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Department of Justice's requirements for the Police Bureau, or the LT2 rule. So we need to do this as we have proceeded with the rest of our system. We need to do it right. We need to do it in the right place and do it well. On the subject of involvement of minority contractors, a subject that we've been talking about at least as long as we've been talking about the LT2 rule, actually probably quite a bit longer. I met with the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission last week, and I reiterated something to them that I want to say here again, and that is I am agnostic about means. I don't know exactly what the right tools are to get to effective implementation of the goal that everybody in the room shares. So I don't have a favorite tool. I just want the tool to work. And I have no interest in appearing to make progress on this issue. I am only interested in actually making progress and having it be sustained. So I want this conversation to continue and for criticisms of what's not working to be clearly heard and addressed, and for new ideas to be considered, truly considered and tried out. You know, one thing that we've been doing lately in city government, whether it's putting cones up on NATO Boulevard or you know, how we hire people, is we try things and we see if they work, and if they don't, we try something else. So please, those of you who work on these issues, you know, keep the both the clear-eyed criticisms coming. Insist that there be internal collaboration between bureaus and leadership and the community, whether it's the involvement of the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission on this project or not, any of those things. It's all legit. So please, I hope you know that all of us are committed to the goal and we'll try things until they work. So let's continue that. Finally, there was a mention in passing here about clean diesel. Although we shouldn't necessarily load that mandate on this project particularly, I think it's really important that we look for ways that we, as a city with a climate action plan and an air quality problem, look for ways to improve both our fleet and the fleet of the private sector that operate in our city and the fleet of our railroads that are completely exempt from most city regulation, because this is a concern, and there are hundreds of people who are afflicted and some of whom die in our city because of asthma that's triggered by diesel particulates. So this is a serious issue. It needs to be addressed, and I certainly want to direct the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff that are responsible for actually getting our climate action plan done by all the bureaus to think again and anew about how do we do that, because we need to do that as a city for our health's sake as well as for our climate's sake. So again, not necessarily particular to the contracting requirements for this project, but this would be a great place to start whatever the next stage of that overall effort is. So thank you all for good work. Aye. Right. And then the second item will pass to second reading.
Right? Yes, Mayor.
Yep. Thank you all very much. Okay, let's move.